Hi, and welcome to The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt, and you're listening to WCHL 97.9 FM and 1360 AM. And today we're recording on my first show here at the new studios in University Place, where WCHL has just moved. And while I'm in a new space, today we're going to talk about an issue that the people of Chapel Hill, Carbo, Orange County have been wrestling with for a long time. And it's not just an issue that is in our local consciousness, but it's one that has pervaded the consciousness, I think, of every American over the last several years. And that's about how policing policy intersects with race. And in particular, the African-American experience is one of the things I'm most interested in. Not just here, not just around the country like we see on CNN and MSNBC, but how it affects our community here locally. You know, as someone who's been here in Chapel Hill for a long time and has had the fortune of being a public servant, I believe I have a clear idea of what our people hope is true about our local policing policies and the way that they intersect with race. But also, having that experience, it's been revealed to me that at times that what we hope it could be or should be is not always exactly the way it plays out. You know, President Obama challenged us all this year, everyone in the country, to have an open and honest conversation about race and law enforcement. He has gathered over the last several years police chiefs from around the country and people engaged in different parts of the legal system to have these conversations. And of course, he was as motivated to talk about these conversations as any of us are. We all know and remember very well what happened in Ferguson in the Michael Brown case. We all have very vivid images of Eric Garner struggling with law enforcement in New York, and of course, what happened in Baltimore. And even most recently, the experience here in North Carolina in Charlotte. And it just seems this issue just will not go away. Whether the president talks about it or police chiefs, there has to be a way in which our people, the people of North Carolina, people who live in our cities, can feel comfortable with the way they are treated by police and law enforcement. Of course, we know we want everyone to respect law enforcement, and I think we all do. But I think that sometimes there may be questions about whether or not people feel respected by law enforcement. So to that end, I took Obama's challenge to heart about having an open and honest conversation. And I thought there were a couple people that we need to have at the table if we're going to have a truly open and honest conversation. One of them, our local district attorney, James Woodall, who's here with me today. Thank you, James, for coming. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for the invitation, Mark. I look forward to talking about this issue.
Well, I know that I and everyone here in the community is anxious to have this with you. And joining him is our local public defender, the public defender, James Williams. Thanks so much, James, for being here with us.
Thanks for the invitation, Mark, and I likewise look forward to this conversation.
Well, I don't believe I'm the only one sitting at this table who has taken the president's challenge to heart. I know that the two of you have been working in collaboration with the police chiefs of Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and I'm sure Pittsburgh, the smaller towns in Chatham County, as well as the sheriff departments of both counties. And I didn't ask them to come. Should I have asked them to be here today, Mr. District Attorney? Should I have had them here too?
Well, maybe sometime you can have them here, but I notice I don't think our table's quite big enough today to handle all the people who could have a meaningful part of this conversation. And I think that's one of the big challenges with these types of issues. Everyone has a point of view. Everyone has a voice that needs to be heard. And I think more importantly, we all need to learn to listen to those voices. So I think this has got to be a continuing conversation.
No, absolutely. Mr. Williams, in your experience, are those law enforcement folks that I will eventually have on this show, I promise you I will, are they listening? Are they listening to the concerns that you and the people you represent have about law enforcement here locally?
I think that that's beginning to happen. I think it's important that you do have all the criminal justice stakeholders at the table at some point together trying to address these issues of race and racism and racial disparities and inequities in our criminal justice system is something that, you know, as you mentioned, the president has engaged on, the Attorney General of the United States. Obviously, they are sort of at the top, but we, at the local levels, I think, have to sort of be sort of engaged in this, because if it doesn't get done locally, what happens at the federal level, you know, really isn't going to change things.
Yeah, it's really, it's moot, right? Because it, we're talking about the day-to-day experience of citizens, of our community, or residents, all the residents of our community. We're not talking about any about these issues in some, you know, even just, not just an aspirational way or some superficial way, but we're talking about the way that people feel on the street every day. Now, I mentioned some high-profile incidents that have occurred that have captured the nation's attention, from Ferguson to Charlotte. Even that, though, even that list of horribles, for many, it still seems far removed. How is it that we should be, or why is it that we should be having this conversation here in Orange County? I mean, aren't we like, aren't we the Eden on this issue? Aren't we the place where everything works perfectly, Mr. Woodall?
Well, I think we all know that we're not. We may hope that. And I think one of the reasons that it's important to have the conversation here, I tell a lot of people, if we can't have a meaningful conversation here, where could we have a meaningful conversation? And I think that these incidents can happen anywhere. And a lot of people aren't aware of this, but they have happened here in the past. And we've dealt with them. We were dealing with them at a time whenever it was not in the national consciousness the way it is today. And one of the things we've done, and James has had tremendous leadership on this, locally we've formed a racial justice task force for our local stakeholders in the criminal justice system to begin looking at these issues and begin having these conversations. And that includes law enforcement agency heads, members of the community, members of the court system, judges, lawyers, and others. So, and we believe we're the first in the state to do this, and we're looking forward to seeing where these conversations can take us.
Well, after the break, let's come back and talk specifically about what the task force's conversations are and what proactive steps we're taking here locally to make sure that, well, what you said, Mr. Woodall, what's happened in the past isn't repeated in the future. So we'll be right back after these messages. And we're back. This is The Deep End with, I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. This is 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Just before the break, I was talking with my guests, our local district attorney, James Woodall, and our local public defender, James Williams, about how this conversation about race and law enforcement is not just a national conversation, but has relevancy here locally. And we learned that they've brought together a group of folks, a racial justice task force, that are actually having conversations about how we can avoid the negative engagements between law enforcement and citizens here in Orange County. So, Mr. Williams, what is the task force talking about? What's the substance of these conversations? And are we going to get any kind of a roadmap on how we can improve our local situation?
I'm not sure we're going to get a roadmap in terms of where we are and how we got started. I mean, I've been involved in trying to bring various people to the table to begin conversations about race and criminal justice for probably at least 6 or so years. And one of the things that struck me when I first began to engage on the effort was, you know, the ABA, a speech that Justice Kennedy gave to the ABA in 2003.
The American Bar Association.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he called for in that groundbreaking speech, well, he talked about mass incarceration, he talked about the significant racial disparities in our criminal justice system, and he called upon the bar and other stakeholders in the system to begin to do something about that. And then the ABA followed the American Bar Association in 2004, did a report that they call the ABA Justice Kennedy Report. And one of the things that they called for at that time was for local jurisdictions, states and jurisdictions at the local level, to form task forces or bodies or commissions to begin to look at race and criminal justice and to see what steps could be taken to reduce some of these disparities. Just last year, ABA, again, the American Bar Association, and the National Association of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund mm-hmm. issued a joint paper in which they called upon various bar groups and bar associations to begin to engage on this issue. And so that was sort of the impetus to go to our district bar, which is called the 15B bar, which includes both Orange and Chatham counties, to go to the leadership and say, we need to form such a task force here in District 15B. And they did so. They approved it. And Jim Woodall and I are co-chairs of the task force. I think our mission is basically to sort of study the data, to look at mm-hmm. how race plays out within District 15B, to analyze it, to see if there are some specific recommendations that can be made here locally to try to reduce inequities, especially unwarranted inequities that we see in our criminal justice system.
So let's just to be clear then, so there is data out there that the task force is looking at, and it is reflecting some of the same kinds of disparities we hear in the national conversation that's going on in other communities? Is that true?
Well, first of all, there is data, but when you say there is data, first of all, you've got to locate the data, then you've got to analyze the data. And so there's differing types of data. The data that, I think we are most, as it relates to policing, for instance, mm-hmm. that we are most familiar with are data related to traffic stops.
Right, of course.
And so we know pretty much what that data is because North Carolina has been collecting the state of North Carolina at the state level has been collecting that data, since the late 1990s. It's all contained in a data set. And a few years ago, we had Frank, when I say we, the North Carolina Advocates for Justice, had Frank Baumgartner, a political scientist at UNC, mm-hmm. to analyze that data set. And without going into all the details, practically in every jurisdiction, every county within the state of North Carolina with a certain size of police department or law enforcement entity, you did see fairly significant racial disparities, not just in who was stopped, but for instance, in searches once people are stopped. There were some pretty startling racial disparities
The experience of a lot of folks would be that they may or may not get stopped speeding up Martin Luther King Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing disparities in the data that first of all, that perhaps more people of color, African Americans particularly, are being stopped perhaps for these kinds of things, running red light or taillight issues or speeding. We're seeing disproportionate stops based on race. And then we're seeing from there, if I'm getting this right, that subsequent searches, once the stop occurs, are being performed when the driver happens to not be white. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not always when, so there are searches that occur when the driver is white. I'm not suggesting that doesn't happen.
Well, we're just seeing a disparity.
Disparities, yes, especially and the disparity is greatest for, statistically speaking, for young black men.
Okay.
The older you get, regardless of your race, then the search rate sort of goes down. But for young black men, even here in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, it's at least twice the rate of searches for white men.
So, and I'm not in court as much as the two of you are. When I do go to court, uh-huh. This isn't data driven, this is just anecdotal.
Right.
I look around to see who else is there.
Right.
And if they're not wearing suits and they're not in front of the bar, it's overwhelmingly African American, Latino, and disproportionately male.
Yeah,
and that are sitting there waiting their turn for their cases to be handled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Woodall, I know that in the district attorney's office, the reality of this isn't lost on you and your staff. And I've noticed that there are some things that the district attorney's office are doing to ensure that perhaps not every one of these folks, because you're not out there obviously stopping folks on the road, but they're not becoming perpetually wrapped into the criminal justice system. You're looking for other ways of dealing with cases. Is that right?
Well, that's right. Now, I do want to say I don't think there's any question there are racial disparities here. There's bias here. Just like there is anywhere. But we do. We have some policies and programs in our office, and we try to get as many people as we can, especially young offenders, offenders with little or no record, out of the criminal justice system and try to have outcomes for them that protect their ability to get jobs later and other things. But that can be a daunting task. It's always reliant on the resources in the communities and sometimes our ability to be creative.
Okay, well, let's get back to the conversation right after this break. And you're back. You're listening to The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. And just before the break, our local district attorney, James Woodall, was talking. Sorry, I had to interrupt you for that, but go ahead and continue with what you were saying, James.
Yeah, one of the things we try to do is we do try to help people. Mm-hmm. We're not in the business of just convicting people of crimes, even minor offenses. We really want to help people. We want to help them get their life on track if it's not on track. But that can be very challenging because of the lack of resources that we're faced with sometimes. We're very lucky here that we have judges and other stakeholders in the criminal justice system who are very supportive of what we do. We have a lot of specialty courts here in which we try to help individuals. We have things here like our community resource court, truancy court. We have a court that we try to help people who find themselves homeless, for example. So we do a lot of things locally, and I think that's where this issue of race and the criminal justice system, policing, and racial disparities is so important. We've got to do our job locally before it can move statewide and it can move to be a national movement. I really think it starts at home. And to that end, another thing that is going on this coming Monday on October 24th at the Chapel Hill Town Hall, there is going to be a town hall discussion on policing, race, and community from conversations to solutions. And we hope to engage the community at large. I think we've got a very good panel that will be there, a good moderator. And this is something that James Williams has worked really, really hard to put together. So I'd like James to tell you a little bit more about that.
Thanks. And that is, we are really excited about the event on Monday. And it is an effort to actually, at bottom, is to increase, to begin this process of increasing trust, building trust between law enforcement and communities of color and marginalized communities, because public safety is dependent upon that. If people don't trust the police, if they don't feel good about law enforcement in their communities, then it's less likely that they are going to cooperate. So it's extremely important that we take steps to enhance and to build that trust. And this event on Monday is a step in that direction. We have law enforcement on the panel. We also have community members and leaders on the panel. We're gonna engage and take questions from the audience so that people within law enforcement can hear some of the concerns of the people, the citizens that they are policing, and citizens can also hear from the police and what their perspectives are. And hopefully through this effort, we can begin to build those bridges that are necessary to improve policing within communities of color and to the benefit of us all. One of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot, we talk a lot about these high-profile cases, but every stop of a citizen by police is an opportunity to build those bridges. How people are treated is so important in terms of whether they feel that they belong in as a citizen in this community, how they feel about our democracy, even whether or not they vote. There are studies done that show all those things are impacted.
Well, I hope that everyone within range of our mouths and are hearing us will come on Monday. And if not, that they participate in the other activities I know both of you are involved in helping this conversation happen in our community. Thank you both so much for being here. This was The Deep End, and we'll see you next week.